An extraordinary amount of traffic now sprang up between the English and the Scottish courts, as the successful Elizabethan courtiers sought to devise methods of becoming successful Jacobean ones. The most practical measure was that taken by Robert Carey. Sending word to Edinburgh to expect him without delay once the Queen was dead, he arranged to have fast horses posted all along the high road to Scotland. Carey intended to be the one who would break the news of his accession to the Scottish king. By Wednesday morning, the 23rd of March, the Queen was speechless and could communicate with her council only by signs. At some point she was to have indicated that James of Scotland should be her successor by putting her hand up to her head at the mention of his name. The story, spread afterwards, was a convenient one to overcome the inconvenient fact that Elizabeth had maintained her obstinate silence on the subject of the succession. Under the circumstances, the council was taking no chances. Extraordinary precautions were being taken to ensure a smooth succession. For example, the council ordered that the wayward Lady Arbella Stuart, Elizabeth's cousin, one possible contender for the throne, should be brought south from Hardwick in Derbyshire. There, far from London, Papists might have kidnapped her and used her as a focus for some kind of coup, since she was believed to have Catholic sympathies. Elsewhere, the principal Papists were detained as the Queen's sickness worsened. The end for Queen Elizabeth came in the early hours of Thursday, the 24th of March. At the last, only her women were with her. The members of the council withdrew from Richmond to Whitehall to draft the vital document which would publicly proclaim James King of England later that morning. The enterprising Robert Carey was already flying north on the first of his swift horses. He arrived in Edinburgh 2 days later, having suffered a great fall by the way, in the course of which his horse kicked him. So, weak with loss of blood, Robert Carey finally staggered into the royal palace at Holyrood and saluted James Stuart by his new fourfold title, King of England, Ireland, Scotland, and France. The medieval Plantagenet claim had never been formally discarded. As proof of the old Queen's death, Carey handed over a sapphire ring which James had sent south, with specific orders that it be returned to him the moment Elizabeth was actually dead. "It is enough," said the King. "I know by this that you are a true messenger." Far into the night, the Sovereign of England sat up asking Carey questions about his new kingdom, having first considerately sent for a surgeon to tend Carey's wounds. The first proclamation of the new sovereign was made in London some 7 or 8 hours after the Queen's death. This proclamation, which referred firmly to the undoubted right of James to succeed, was read first at Whitehall Gate, then by the High Cross in Cheapside, and finally at the Tower of London, where the prisoners of state, including the priests, rejoiced along with the others. Father Weston was able to watch from his window, listening to the crying out and noting the pomp with which the ceremony was performed. He realized that the council had calculated every detail with precision and thoroughness. By nightfall, bonfires were burning brightly throughout the capital. Although the French ambassador was shocked by the ungrateful behaviour of the Londoners in lighting fires to celebrate their sovereign's death, there's no doubt that these were flames of rejoicing, not lamentation. The people were saluting a prince of great hope, and throughout the country, not only in London, the sound of trumpets and other music was heard in the marketplace. Far from causing trouble, as had been anticipated, the leading Papists hastened to demonstrate their enthusiasm publicly, seeing in this moment an excellent opportunity to start the reign as they meant to go on, as loyal subjects of the new king, for all their dissident religious views. Even the Jesuit priests, whose mere presence in England was illegal and punishable by death, wanted to display their patriotism. Father Henry Garnet, superior of the Jesuits in England, sent a letter to a prominent courtier, hoping that it would be shown to James, in which he expressed the Jesuits' wish to be dear and not unnatural subjects of the crown.